Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of Let's Grow Girls, the only podcast out there dedicated to cut flowers only, I think. Sarah will correct me if I'm wrong.
Maybe. Not sure. This week we are welcoming Laura Lee of Florally Seasonal Flowers, a grower from Bungaree in Victoria, Australia. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
How is your day going?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
You're our first Australian guest. Ooh. A little crown for that. Your accent is amazing. I just got to get that out there.
Oh, thank you.
I did ask Sarah if she could do an Australian accent before we recorded because my ability to do accents is terrible. And we both decided we weren't even going to attempt it. So we won't embarrass ourselves today. But yeah, you're our first Australian guest. So thank you very much for bearing with us on the time difference, because I could not get my head around it, but it's about 11 a.m. here, and you stayed up very late for us today, haven't you? So thank you for that.
Oh, that's all right. My pleasure. Thank you.
So talk to us. You're in Bungaree.
Yes, that's right.
How much space do you grow on? What are we talking? Big, small, huge?
We have 20 acres, but I don't grow on 20 acres. So at the moment I would grow, I think probably about, it would be over an acre now though, I think, because we have, mm-hmm. this year we'll be putting in 5,000 dahlias. And then wow. I have about 3,000 peonies, although 2,000 of those are currently in pots.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then some annuals as well.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
And obviously I think we need to just cover this because the majority of our guests are sort of in the Northern Hemisphere and you're not, so you're on opposite seasons to us, so you're just coming into dahlia season now and we're just sadly on the way out of it. But what are your kind of summer winter temps down there?
Yeah, well, we're just about to have our last frost tomorrow and then we'll be planting dahlias, so yeah, very much opposites.
Oh, that's cool.
So in terms of like winter temperatures, we get down to around -5 degrees Celsius. We don't get much colder than that.
I never think of Australia going that cold.
Yeah, well, we're in the south of Australia. So definitely in the north, they wouldn't get as cold as we do down here. So yeah, we would get to -5. We don't get much lower than that. And then in terms of summer and our hot temps, like we'll get high 30s with the occasional 40. And that would be about as hot as we get to.
Okay, so you're not massively different than here in the UK. Probably sounds like you've got a bit better summer than ours, but
we don't really get snow where I live either. So we'd be lucky to get like a little sprinkling of snow, mm-hmm. Enough to kind of scrape together a snowman maybe once every second year.
so it must make for growing the dahlias quite good in the summer though, to have those warmer temps.
It is nice. However, we can get unseasonal frosts. So for us, we have had frost in, whilst, you know, our last frost date is tomorrow, which is like October, we could get a frost, like a random frost in January. So that's like 4 months into our growing season. We might just get like a random frost. And that has affected my dahlia season before.
Oh, goodness. That's so weird.
How weird. That would be like us having a frost in
July.
Like...
yeah.
How weird.
Yeah.
Oh.
The dahlia gods, they don't.
Are you out there with your frost cloth trying to cover 5,000 dahlias?
Oh, well, this will be our largest year. So last year we had 2,700. But no, it's completely impossible to cover that amount with frost cloth.
Just protect the precious ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I have done that before because I grow some seedlings and do dahlia breeding. Mm-hmm. I would like go out and like cover my precious seedlings that haven't flowered yet because I want to see what they are.
Yeah, it's a nightmare, that a late frost like that. That's crazy. I suppose though it's not like a full heavy thick frost though. It's just not like a killing frost.
No. So normally it will just like, I don't know if you've had this, if you have like a light frost with your dahlias, how it just like kills off the cells in
yes.
the top part of
yeah.
the bud. So then you'll just get like a half flower mm-hmm. open. Yeah. So that would happen. So I would have to go through and like deadhead the whole patch. And then when the fresh lot of buds come through, then I'll get good flowers again. But sometimes it will affect my flower sales because I sell predominantly to florists. Mm-hmm. And so I might have, if we have an out of season frost, it could mean that I have like 2 or 3 weeks in the middle of my season where I'm like, sorry, I don't have anything. We'll have to wait till the next lot of buds come through.
Oh, that's a shame. So you do sell most of your flowers to florists, don't you?
Yes, 90%.
Oh, goodness. And what do you do with the other 10%? Cram the house.
Some wholesale bunches. Well, that would be lovely. But actually, I'm usually so busy during cut flower season, we don't have many flowers in the house.
Spoken like a true farmer.
Or if I sell them all. I mean, that's the ideal, isn't it?
Yeah.
In business, you want to sell all your product. So I do some wholesale bunches and then a small amount of direct from the farm sales to the public.
I really want to just rewind back to the part about the peonies.
Oh, sorry.
I like one track mind. I love
I
a peony.
I knew when you said peony, Sarah would want to go back to it.
you said it and I've been thinking about it this whole time, but like nodding politely. So just back to the peonies. What makes you have them in pots? What inspired that?
Cost, basically. So peony roots are so expensive. And I don't think we have the same wholesale opportunities as you have in the north. So for me, like to buy roots here, I could be paying like probably $10 is for like a cheap root, and for like an expensive root, like upwards of 60. Like I've seen some, like even tree peonies are like around 100 or more.
Yeah.
So to buy enough to plant out a paddock, because I'm not the person who does things by like halves. If I'm like, you know, I'm all in. So
go big or go home. We love that.
With the peonies, I'm like, that's right. So with the peonies, I'm like, I don't want to just plant out like a couple of rows. I'm like, I want a paddock. So the original plan when we moved to this property and I started to get into flower farming and even considering that as an option was that I wanted to plant out a 5-acre paddock of peonies. But I can't afford to buy 5 acres worth of peonies. So we've just been slowly propagating our own.
Oh, that's amazing.
Our paddock size has downsized, so we're not going to plant out 5 acres anymore. But it will still be a couple of acres of peonies by the time we plant them out. So I'm slowly propagating my own, and that's why they're in pots. Because it's easier to tip out a pot and divide them than dig up a root.
I mean, it sounds like the cost of yours are about the cost of ours that are retail rather than wholesale. Because I think the Australian dollar's about the equivalent of about half the amount of pounds. So if you're paying, you know, $10, that's about £5, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be about right. Yes.
And then what size pots do you keep them in? I'm being really nosy and I really want to put some peonies in pots.
No, that's fine. They would be about a 30, I want to say like a 30 litre pot. I don't know if that's right.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so they have like pretty decent diameter.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, yes, dahlias. Let's do dahlias. Let's just pretend that wasn't me, that was someone else.
You can talk about peonies. I
love a peony.
Well, I think we need you back for like a whole peony episode because we get so many questions about peonies. And actually, when I was doing my little bit of research on you, I remembered, my goodness, you've got all the peonies because I saw you doing some of the propagating before.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, nah, that we need you to come back for a peony episode. So maybe that's next on the cards if you'll come back after this interrogation.
Yeah.
So like we said, we're obviously on opposite seasons. So for us at the moment, we're coming to dig up the dahlias and we are getting so many questions from the listeners about should they dig them up or shouldn't they dig them up? You know, what do you do? What would you recommend?
Yeah, well, the climate in Australia varies quite a lot. And so people in Australia do lots of different things too. So some people do leave their dahlias in and other people dig them. If you live in an area where the soil isn't going to freeze and it is well draining, then chances are that your tubers aren't going to rot and they would be safe being in the ground. The main risk with leaving them in the ground here is that they would rot. So we do dig all of ours and we get quite high rainfall over winter and the ground, like, you know, we often have standing water on the ground that you can see. So it would be very risky for us to leave them in. But I know growers who live, you know, in fairly well-draining areas, then they're fine to leave them in the soil.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest worry here as well is rot because, I mean, where I am, I don't necessarily get standing rain, but the soil does kind of like get really, you know, gross and mushy over winter because we get some high rainfall as well. And I always say, you know, if they just like garden dahlias, you're probably not going to want to dig them up out of the borders and mess everything up. But if you're growing for growing, then I can't leave them in the ground. I'm too worried. I wouldn't sleep all winter worrying about the little babies out there getting rotten.
Yes.
You're digging and dividing, aren't you, every winter?
Yeah, that's right. So we always dig and divide because we sell our excess stock, and that would be that's a large part of our business.
So that's another bonus to digging up.
Yes. Yeah.
And so do you do the kind of like, do you sell tubers sort of one finger at a time?
Yes.
Okay. I was trying it. We called them sausages in a previous episode, and I wasn't sure if that's what we were going for.
Yeah, we just call them tubers.
Tubers, that works. Yeah.
One tuber and one clump.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because when we, so here, when you buy them traditionally from retailers, you get the whole clump.
Oh.
And then this year, I really want to learn to divide mine into the individual tubers, because every time I try, I massacre them. I just like, it's a horror show. They just don't.
It's definitely worth learning because yeah. You get more free plants.
Exactly. It seems like such a skill. Would you have any tips or?
Yeah, well, I think if you're not sure, the best time to divide is in spring when the mm-hmm. eyes are starting to shoot again and they're more apparent, because over winter it can be really difficult to see yeah. them. And also if you're not sure, then even just dividing a clump in half or into mm-hmm. quarters, chances are there's going to be at least one eye in there and you've at least got four new plants.
Yeah.
So you don't have to divide them all the way down into individual tubers.
Mm-hmm. That was my kind of technique. But then I found when I did it, so many of the tubers fell off that I felt really terrible. And when you see people do it on Instagram, they divide them and they're not losing loads of tubers through their like inability. I just felt like every time I chopped them, a bunch of things would fall off and I'd be like, no.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends like how many tubers there are in a clump. And sometimes mm-hmm. like some clumps are very tight. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost impossible not to damage any tubers when you're dividing them in a tight clump, mm-hmm. as opposed to one that's where the fingers or the sausages are very like spread out. Then it's easier to divide them without damaging anything.
Yeah, that is definitely what I'd say. I compare mine to the ones I see on Instagram, and I know we shouldn't compare. And mine are like really tight, huge clumps. And when they do it, theirs all seem really spread out and really easy. And I'm like, but it's so easy when they do it. And there's me with my secateurs and my little knife, like, what next? Like,
That's your problem. You're just starting.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What are you using to cut them? Because I shamefully admitted on a previous episode that I actually used a bread knife to cut my cafe Olay in half.
Yeah,
that's the one and only time I used a bread knife, but it worked. I got two plants.
Yeah,
yes, that's good. I've experimented with lots of different methods, but mm-hmm. I go at them pretty hard. So my tools now would be a chisel, a hammer, ooh. A pair of like really sturdy secateurs, and then some fine kind of needle nose secateurs. Mm-hmm. So they're the four things I usually use when I'm dividing.
A chisel?
Yes.
A chisel.
So I use a chisel to like wedge into the main stalk
mm-hmm.
And then bang down with a hammer so that I can like split it into sections because it's quite like it's very thick there, and trying to get through that with your secateurs is really mm-hmm. hard work on your hands.
Onto the shopping list, a chisel
yes.
and a hammer.
Yes, do it. It's so much easier.
We had a previous Dahlia guest on Just Dahlias. I don't know if you follow Philippa, but she actually uses, and you could probably get these easily in Australia, I'm imagining, sheep shearing scissors. She swears by them.
Okay.
Because they're like, you know, industrial.
Big.
They look like a bit like secateurs, but because they're so strong, they're good for cutting. So yeah. Another tip for you there.
No, I like my system. I'm sticking to it.
I think we need to investigate this. I actually think I might have a chisel, you know, in the shed somewhere in Tom's toolbox. Yes. So
you'll be wondering where it went.
But you've got quite a lot of highlights on your Instagram page, haven't you, for your dividing dahlias?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the question I get asked the most, so mm-hmm. I try to save information there for people.
Oh, I'd watch them. It steeled me up, I think. I'm going to give it a go this year. I've I think it's the first time I've grown like varieties that are less easy to get that I really want to try and propagate. Mm. So it's made me want to give it a go, because you know, if you're growing cafe au lait, like, we can get that anywhere here, but I know in Australia that it's less easy for you to get some of those varieties that we have like that here. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So because of quarantine, we actually can't import dahlia tubers. So any new variety that comes in here either needs to be imported by a company that's large enough to pay to grow out that dahlia tuber for 12 mm-hmm. months in a quarantine facility, any sign of any problems, and they'll just get rid of it and your money is lost. So the only way we get new varieties here is either by breeding them ourselves or through a big company that can afford it, bringing them in.
Mm.
Yeah, we've seen border control programs. We know how tight your import rules are there.
Oh, yes. Nicole, you love that
it's
stuff.
It's a big show here, the Australian border control, what crazy people like to try and smuggle into Australia. I've never seen a dahlia tuber, though. Lots of weird food and drugs, but never a dahlia tuber. But
I'm sure there are some sneaky people where it might have happened.
Definitely.
But yeah, so obviously the breeding's quite a big thing for you now, which means the digging and dividing is
important.
Is super important, isn't it? Because that's the only way that you can propagate the exact flower that you want. It's not something that can be done from a seed, is it?
No, but it could also be done through a cutting. Mm-hmm. However, that's pretty labour intensive. So we do just mm-hmm. do the tuber division at this stage.
Before we go on to breeding, there is one last thing that you know that we get asked all the time, and it's storage.
Oh,
that
very
follows
valid.
The dividing, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
That does. Fine.
Storage follows. How do you do it? This is like the age-old subject, isn't it? I feel like this is even more of a big question than like to dig or not to dig. It's what do you do with them once you've dug them up?
Yeah, I feel like everyone does this so differently, and I'm sure there are some things we do that other growers would be horrified by. So we dig up our tubers. We mm-hmm. don't wash them. So we just dig up the clump. We knock as much dirt off it as we can in the field, cut back the stalk, tip them upside down so the water drains out of the stalk. Otherwise, that can cause rot while they're in storage. And then we stack them all in crates with the dirt still on them, and stack them all up in the shed until we have time to divide.
Mm-hmm.
Then as we divide, we usually start dividing any time pretty much from as soon as we've dug the field, we can mm-hmm. start dividing, and we'll divide all through winter. And then after we've divided, we still haven't washed any soil off.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people will find it hard to see the eyes if they don't wash them, but when you've divided thousands, you get pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we just leave the soil on, and then we store them. We've tried a few different mediums. So we've stored in sawdust, we've mm-hmm. stored in like cocoa peat, like coconut fiber, and we've stored in potting mix. Usually we store in sawdust because it's the most economical,
mm-hmm.
and I can usually find a free source of sawdust. And when you're storing thousands of tubers, free is good.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, really. And we also tried storing in potting mix, and I would actually say that is my preference, potting mm-hmm. mix. I do think that they store the best in it. It seems to have a more stable moisture level, whereas the sawdust is very prone to drying out, and you have to be really on top of adding some moisture to it. In our climate, we have more challenges with rot and with mold than we do with tubers shriveling or drying out, especially mm-hmm. early in the months of storage. So we would tend to store in either dry sawdust or dry potting mix. And then when we're getting closer to planting, a couple of months out, we would start to add some moisture to that just with a watering can. And then that kind of encourages those tubers to wake up because it's starting to get a bit warmer. The mm-hmm. shed where we store them in has north facing windows. And so the sun, I think it's probably the opposite for you here. There, probably south facing is warmer. Is that right?
yeah, that's right.
Anyway, our north facing windows are warmer. So the sun is like streaming right through those in winter, and then it starts to warm them up and encourage them to start to sprout and grow roots even while they're in storage in that slightly damp medium. And then it means when we go to plant them out, you know, some of them often have roots, or they at least have quite visible eyes or even shoots. I've mm-hmm. got some shoots that are like 30 centimeters long sitting in my shed waiting to be planted out because of frost risk. So,
Oh, wow. I found a dahlia that I accidentally left in the shed and haven't planted, and that's got like a foot.
Yeah. Is it trying to flower?
I don't think it's trying to flower. It's very pale looking because there's no light in my shed. So
wow.
It's, it's been in there the whole summer. My husband was like, do you know there's something growing in there? but it's probably worth noting that your shed is like a proper big, it's like a building, isn't it? Rather than what an English shed would be.
Not necessarily. It's like a Colourbond shed. So it's like the corrugated steel kind of shed on a concrete floor. It's not really anything fancy.
No, but I mean, like, a lot of our sheds here are like really small wooden structures that have got felt roofs. Oh. And the felt roofs, they heat up so much, even in the winter, that they can start to wake up the dahlias even in the middle of winter because it gets so warm in the sheds.
Oh, okay.
So I wouldn't recommend storing them in your average shed if you're in the UK. I think, you know, we normally say like a spare bedroom that's got the heating off, or an understairs cupboard or something, mm-hmm. rather than a full-on a shed, because I think that would probably wake a lot of them up here.
Okay, yeah. Actually, one thing I didn't mention is we also have a fan permanently going in the shed. Mm. So because dahlias are like, they're still living even mm-hmm. though they're dormant, so they're still they need oxygen and they need that airflow. So we just have the fan going all the time, and that prevents or minimizes issues with rot.
And then this is completely random, but how do you label them after you dig them up? Because I have issues. I had those labels that, you know, they go through themselves in a
yes,
there's a name.
Lochen. Lochen.
Like a long
Lochen label or something.
Long strip.
Yeah, I know the ones you mean, but mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, no idea. I had those.
you get them when you go to the airport as well for your luggage tags, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, similar. No, we have sticker kind of luggage tags here.
God, we're learning so much about Australia today. Sheds, luggage. Like, I'm going to come on holiday and I'm going to be so prepared. And I tried those and they still fell off. And I was like, I don't really. Yeah, and so my next theory, I'm going to write on them in Sharpie. That's my next plan. Because I've seen people do that, and I'm like, that can't fall off, she says.
Yes, that's right. If you're actually writing on directly on the tuba.
Yeah.
Well, we don't wash ours, so writing on a dirty tuba wrecks your texture pretty quickly. I've tried that. Yeah. So what we do is, before we dig, I've got my the order that I've planted everything in a map. I tend to use Google Sheets for that. So I've got my big database of all of that. And I will go out when things are still flowering, and I attach a metal tree tag to the base of the first and last of each variety in a row. Mm. So they're like an aluminium tag that you can just inscribe with like a ballpoint pen, and it just like leaves an impression in it. And then you tie them on with a little copper wire. I like those because I can reuse them from year to year, so they're more sustainable. But also, I have also used flagging tape. Have you heard of that before?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a long kind of tape you can get from, or here it's like Bunnings, but your hardware store or whatever. And you can write on that with a Sharpie. But if I use those directly on my tubers or even on my crates, I've had issues with like rats or mice like chewing off that tape and taking it away. And so then I'm like, I've labeled all my crates and now I have no idea what's in that because rats stole the
tape.
Stole the label and went and made a nest.
Ah, okay.
They've got very colourful nests.
They do. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I use the metal tree tags, a combination of the metal tree tags and the flagging tape. So I did use the flagging tapes because I'm storing my dahlias in like quite large crates when they're still clumps. And then even after they're divided, I was putting a metal tree tag, hanging that on the front of the crate, but they're really small. And from a distance, I was finding it quite hard to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So now I do like a double tagging method so that if the mice or the rats steal one of my tags, I still have a backup because they never eat the metal and the copper. So I put the metal one inside the crate, and then I use flagging tape, and I just buy as many colors as I can. So I've got purple and red and yellow and pink and blue and green, whatever. And then I can write the variety name on that, and I color code my crates so that from a distance I can be like, oh, I'm looking for a yellow dahlia. I can just look for the yellow tags, and then it's easier for me to find that variety.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that organization. I love it. It pleases the type A in me.
It definitely makes life easier.
Are you dividing them all by yourself, or have you got help? Is your husband involved in the business, or have you got extra helpers?
My husband is wonderful, but he has done some dividing of dahlias, but he prefers not to. So Ethan, he actually studied agricultural science, so he's an agronomist, and he works for a vegetable seed company here in Australia. But he does like tractor work plans and sets up irrigation. I say he's the farm manager. Like he does the planning. Oh, like
he's a proper blue jobs.
And he'll like tell me what to do if I'm like, Ethan, where should I plant this, or can I do this? And yeah. So definitely we're very much a team. But he doesn't particularly like dividing dahlias. And look, to be honest, it like takes us months of like 9 to 5 of dividing dahlias every day for months.
Oh, wow.
So it's a big job.
Oh, wow.
So I have done it by myself in the past, but this last year I did employ a contractor to help me, and she's come back again. So she's done 2 years of dividing with me now, and she's actually going to become a staff member. So she'll be our first employee.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Her name's Hannah. She's wonderful.
She must be really good at dividing dahlias for that.
She's great. But I mean, like, you know, when you've divided a couple thousand, you you definitely improve. Yeah. But no, she's got a great eye for eyes. She can see the eyes, and she's wonderful.
I think that's the hardest bit, isn't it? And you hear all sorts of like old wives' tales about what's the best way to see the eyes, don't you? I read recently some guy saying that you should cut the stalks down and then leave them in the ground for another 3 weeks, and that makes the eyes really prominent. Have you ever heard that before?
I have heard similar, and I can see some truth in that. So for us, like after we will have a frost, or look, to be honest, we don't always have a frost that ends our season either. So sometimes we have to cut back our plants in stages to kind of trick them into dormancy. So after we've like done the final cut, usually we do wait a little bit of time, because it allows like the tubers, each time you do a cut back or you have a frost, it means that the tubers are kind of storing the energy, and so like absorbing the sugars back into the tubers. And so yeah, I can understand that maybe that would make the eyes more prominent. I do find the eyes more prominent straight after digging than they certainly are over the winter.
And then obviously they start getting prominent again in spring when they start waking up.
Yes. So it's easiest to divide straight after digging or wait until spring. It's that middle area where they're really dormant, which is the most challenging. But, you know, that's when we're dividing because we have so many.
Yeah. And obviously if you're trying to sell them, you want to do them as early as possible, right? You don't want to be waiting until spring when people are itching to plant them.
That's right. Yeah.
Because as I recently discovered, packing up bulbs and things takes a long time in itself. Even never mind the dividing, it's the packing and the labeling and all of that stuff as well, isn't it? That takes a significant amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And in Australia, like because we have quite varied climates, like whilst I'm in the south of Australia, like up north, they can plant, they don't get any frost, and they can be planting like months before us. So I try to offer tubers as soon as I can, and particularly post them to like growers who are in Queensland and northern New South Wales, because they want to be planting them as soon as possible. Whereas, you know, in Victoria, we're still waiting a couple of months or even in Tasmania before we can plant.
Oh, wow. So I will let Sarah move on to the next subject, because I think we've covered digging and storing and dividing well enough now. So ask your breeding questions, Sarah.
Oh, I just, firstly, so how long have you been doing it? When did you start your breeding patch?
Pretty much as soon as I started growing dahlias. So I've been growing for 5 years now. And yeah, we put in seedlings that very first year. So I collected seed with permission from another dahlia grower. They're called country dahlias. Pretty much everyone in Australia would know them because they used to be the only place pretty much you could buy dahlias from. Like when started growing, I was like, there were two options of places I could buy dahlias from in Australia.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, so I collected some seed with permission from Jenny at Country Dahlias and, yeah, whacked them in that first year and that started an obsession.
Ooh, so 5 years. So have you got any, obviously we won't expect any, like, proper details, but do you have any that you have your eye on? Do you feel hopeful about any of them?
New release?
Yeah.
I always have dahlias that are coming up in our breeding program for release. Mm-hmm. So from that first year, I grew, 200 seedlings that first year. And I ultimately have only kept two of those out of the 200. And the other 198, they got fed to the sheep because they didn't make the cut.
You've got sheep too?
Yes, we have sheep. Yep. So they're glorified lawnmowers on the rest of the 20 acres.
Cheap labour though. So, you know, what more could you want?
So I kept two of those and they were my very first release before I even became florally seasonal flowers. So there's Merton's Peach Single that is existing out there.
Woohoo!
And then another one is Florally Novice, and that was the first kind of proper variety that I released.
Ooh, was it, how does it feel like sending your baby into the world?
It's pretty exciting. I love breeding dahlias and like wandering through like the dahlia seedling patch is probably my favorite part of farming now. Because it's like, you know, opening up like a mystery box of chocolates and you don't know what's inside, or, you know, just that surprise of like wandering down the rows and being like, oh, what's going to be open today? Or, oh, that one's starting to show some color. Or that one's got lots of petals. And it just, yeah, it's really exciting. I love it.
Is it the same kind of strike rate each year? Is it about two out of the lot, or has it gotten higher as you've gone on, like the number of ones you want to keep?
It's definitely gotten higher, yeah. So that first year when I saved seed, I wasn't especially selective about which plants I saved seed from, and it was more about, like, I was also learning to identify ripe dahlia seed. So I was just like, ooh, this pod has ripe seed, and I was just like excited by getting ripe seed. And so I collected seeds like from anemone types and from pom-poms and decoratives and balls. Like I was even singles and collarettes, like I was not really looking at particular, I didn't have any goals, let's put it that way. I was just like looking for seed and threw them in, and I had a lot of single flowers and collarettes and a lot with a lot of pollen showing. Whereas over time I have set myself some breeding goals and I know, you know, what kind of things I'm looking for and what traits I want in a plant or what particular colors I'm hoping to introduce in Australia. And so then I am selecting better parents. That will hopefully produce the kind of offspring that I want. But look, the reality is like dahlia breeding is a bit like playing the lottery in that like a dahlia has like 8 genes. So it's not just like you're crossing 8 times 8, it's like 8 to the power of 8. So it's like 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 possible outcomes from 2 individual flowers.
When you put it like that, it definitely sounds like the lottery.
It's a lot of chance. So when you get a good one, I mean, the bees play a big part and you just feel really lucky.
Oh, wow. That's
so do you let pollination occur naturally, or are you doing any hand pollination?
Yeah, so far we've just done bee pollinated pods. And like when I was first starting, I wasn't even recording which parent I would take the seed from. So that's something I've only started to do more recently. And Christine from Santa Cruz Dahlias has encouraged me to, like, just through what she shares, like, has encouraged me to be a bit more organized in my dahlia breeding and my record keeping and that kind of thing. So now we record at least the mother plant that we collected the seed from. And last year was the first year that we saw the offspring of those seed. And that was really interesting and really helpful too, because I had some varieties that were really great plants, but actually all of their seedlings were rubbish. And so then that shows me, oh, I won't save seed from that plant again. I'll save seed from, you know, Florally Ponyo, which gave me all these great, you know, seedlings. So it is very much trial and error. Yeah, yeah. A learning as you go.
I particularly like your Florally Oracle.
Mm, it's pretty. You would love that because it's pink.
Yeah.
You know her so well.
How did you know I was going to go for that one?
Oh, my God, Nicole.
I saw it and I was like, ooh. Because I think, you know, judging by what limited knowledge I have of Australia, like you said, your dahlia market has only sort of recently started being booming in the last few years. And I think that how your dahlias have been like how our dahlias were 20 years ago when they were considered more of like an old-fashioned flower, and there was lots of reds and orange and yellows, and you know they weren't the things that florists want as much as, you know, now people are looking for the pinks and the blushes and the salmons and the corals, you know. Obviously the yellows and oranges are still popular, but I think you didn't have a lot of those more modern colours around, did you?
No, and I think like a lot of people, yeah, did think of dahlias as old-fashioned flowers. Like a lot of people that I've spoken to have memories of their grandparents growing dahlias. Like my grandma used to grow dahlias, but she grew like the spiky cactus ones in bright colours, and she would always like, you know, when I started growing dahlias, she couldn't understand how as a young mum I had the time, because she was like, she would be staking her dahlias and like trimming like the laterals and always like tying up the branches, and we don't stake any of our dahlias actually, so they have no support. And yeah, it's very different. I don't grow any cactus types. Like I love the like the informal decoratives with their wavy petals, and I tend to go for like the smaller size flowers, like which we would call a miniature decorative here, or even a small decorative. But I don't usually go much bigger than that, because I find the smaller sizes are more versatile for flower arranging, and because florists are usually buying my flowers, that works well for us. Yeah,
you want the pom-poms and the miniature balls and things like that. They all do well, don't they? I noticed you've got quite a few of those in your own varieties.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so they're the ones that I tend to select from a seedling perspective as well, because a plant that produces smaller flowers will also produce more flowers. That means more stems for me to sell, as opposed to like a plant like Café au Lait or other dinner plate varieties. They produce beautiful flowers, but they don't produce as many, so that means less stems to sell. So it's just, yeah, finding that balance as a business.
Because everybody wants a Café au Lait, right? There's always a market for a Café au Lait.
Yes, there is. Yeah. We grew a 400 last year.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you definitely had a few. There's definitely a few there.
Yes.
But like you say, you know, when you're a home grower, or when you've just got a small patch and you've only got one or two Café au Lait plants in, and then you've got something like, I don't know if you get the Jowy varieties there, if you've got something like Jowy Winnie next to it.
No,
for
I
us.
Know what they are, but yeah, I don't have any of those.
Oh, that's such a shame. But you know, they're pumping out the blooms in comparison to Café au Lait, and you know, when space is at a premium.
Yes.
Or if you're trying to make money from them, then it's definitely you're going to lean towards those productive ones.
Yeah, that's right. But the reality is, like, because I sell a lot of flowers for weddings, or pre-COVID I did. Now it's all a little bit all over the place. yeah, but the Café au Lait, like those, you know, really neutral or blush nude kind of tones, they're just really popular for weddings. So, yeah, people always want a Café au Lait.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Though, controversially, I didn't grow any this year.
That's all right. I actually don't love them.
Yeah, I don't really like, they don't really do it for me. Everyone's always like, oh, Café au Lait. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, like they were the dahlia that kind of got me into growing dahlias. Like when I first started. Because I saw, like, you know how I said it's really hard for us to get those varieties here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big nurseries brought them in, and I saw it on the front of their magazine, and I was like, oh my goodness. Ethan, did you know, like, we have this one in Australia. We didn't have it in Australia before. I have to buy it. So I just, like, bought four and was like, that was the start of my dahlia obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Café au Lait's got a lot to answer for.
It does. It does. But now that I've grown a lot more varieties of dahlias, I've realised that the plants for Café au Lait are harder work, and they're not as reliable in the production of their flowers like many of the other varieties are.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you on that. But like you say, she's not going anywhere, is she?
No, I don't think so. But we're trying to use some of those genetics in our breeding as well.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, because she's a beautiful colour, isn't she? Mm. And I think if you can get that sort of colour. I like how the back of her petals are pinker than the front.
They're so variable here. I find early in the season my Cafe Au Lait are really pink, like both sides of the petals. They're just really pink.
And then
the end of the season, they're like this washed out cream. So they vary a lot, over the season.
Yeah, the weather's got a lot to answer for when it comes to dahlia colours, I think. Mm. You know, people are like, why doesn't my blah, blah, blah look like yours? Well, that's because you're growing in a hotter climate or, you know.
The soil pH really makes different. A difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. They're not like a rose, are they? You know, they've got, I mean, although roses do vary in climate, but they're so variable on every account, dahlias. You know, they are easy to grow. You know, you put the tuber in the dirt and they come up, but there's a lot to answer for in terms of, like what you say, the pH of the soil and the weather. So, you know, anyone who does any breeding, I'm always in awe of how you do it.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I love it.
And do you see that's more where your business is going to go into in the future?
Well, for us, the largest part of like income for our business is dahlia tuber sales. So, like more so than our cut flower sales. Mm. So I think that, the demand is definitely there for that. And we want to be able to provide new and interesting things to the Australian market. And because we can't get those things from overseas, that does give us quite like a unique opportunity to be able to offer those things. So yeah, breeding will definitely be a big part of our business. And actually this year, when I said we'll be planting over 5,000 dahlias, that's over double what we planted last year because we're trying to better meet demand. Because our tuber sales this year, like less than half the people on my mailing list had even seen that I'd opened my store and we're already sold out. Like the other people didn't even get a chance. So I just think the demand is really growing in Australia and we're trying our best to... make as many people happy and fall in love with dahlias as we can.
Oh, wow, those 20 acres are going to be full soon.
I don't think we can manage that many, even like with Ethan and Hannah. Like Ethan's working full time off the farm, but he still does a lot. And then, Hannah and I are now both, well, I'm not quite full time because we have three little kids. So my youngest is 4.5, so he's still at home. But between Hannah and I, I'll be interested to see how we go managing, the 5,000 this season. 5,000.
Plus the seedlings. Oh, wow. Mm. Plus the seedlings, that's on top of the 5,000.
Yeah, that's right. So 5,000 tubers. Oh, wow. And then we've got just over 1,000 seedlings. And then like a tiny little quarantine patch of like new things we're bringing in so that we don't spread virus to our existing stock.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Your hands and Hannah's hands are going to be full next season.
They will be, yes. I don't even want to think about digging up yet. Let's just get them planted and in the ground.
Yeah, no, you've got time. You've got time.
One job at a time.
Cross that bridge when you get to it. And then just a pure nosy point. So do you take your seeds for your breeding program from your cutting patch or do you have a separate? I'm guessing you do. Yeah.
Previously, I haven't planted out a separate breeding patch and I've just tagged plants within the rows that I want to save seed from so that I don't deadhead them when I'm going through and harvesting and that kind of thing. But this year we will have a dedicated breeding patch. So there'll be a section at the end of one of the rows where, we've selected the plants with characteristics that we want. So, looking at our breeding goals and looking at, the characteristics of those plants. So say we want varieties that have really good storing tubers. So you know how some varieties are just really hard to store no matter what you do, no matter how much you look after them, those tubers are going to rot or they're going to shrivel out in storage. So we don't want to pass those characteristics onto their offspring. So we're picking the varieties that have tubers that store really well and putting them in there as well as, you know, desirable colors or shapes or sizes. So our dahlia breeding patch, this will be the first year that we try that and I'm really excited for it. And I do want to try some hand crosses this year. 'Cause I have tried 2 hand crosses in the past. I know that's not very many, but neither of them were successful. So then I just let the bees do the job. So this year I'm motivated to give it a better shot so that, because I think with, you know, with dahlias, it really is a game of numbers. The more you do, like in terms of seedlings, the better chance you have of getting something good.
Oh, that's exciting. I can't wait to see what comes up again this year.
Yeah, me too.
How long do you think it takes from having like a flower that you like for it to be something that's viable? Are you taking a good, you know, 2 or 3 years of growing that tuber out to see if it's what you actually want? You know, does it still have those nice strong stems, that kind of thing? Or is it much longer than that?
Yeah, so we trial a new variety for 3 seasons before we'll release it, because sometimes characteristics can change and a variety can deteriorate very quickly or change from what it looked like that first season. So when you get your first flower that first year from one plant, it's like you can make a call, oh, that looks good, I'd like to see that again. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to know and like ultimately how it's going to go based on one plant. Whereas, you know, then the next year we'll have divided that and we might have 4 plants or 5 plants or something. Mm. And then we can evaluate again. If it's still showing promise, then the ones from that year that show promise, then they'll progress into their third year. And then if after that third year, they're still looking good, we will sometimes release them in that after that third year. Because 3 years is kind of enough to know if it's stable and if it's good. Mm. However, sometimes we don't have the quantity. So if we don't have the quantity, we think that we'll meet demand after 3 years, then we'll wait 4 before we release them. Mm-hmm. So Florally Oracle, that pink one that you mentioned you like the look of, that one we waited 4 years because I was like, yeah, I called it Oracle because we're kind of making a bit of a prediction about how popular it would be.
Definitely.
And I was like, everyone is going to love this. My florists love this. So I already knew that I wanted to plant as much of it as I could before I released it.
Look at that. We will definitely share this one on our feed. But Sarah, look at that babe.
God, that is pretty it dreamy. Is
ticks all of my boxes.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It gets kind of like a dustier pink towards the end of the season too. So it's really pretty.
Oh, she's amazing. I bet you were so pleased when you saw that one come up in the patch.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That I feel like would have been followed by a scream and a little dance of happiness.
I get very excited. I do. Then I'm like taking like a million photos trying to get the angle right and the color right.
But so does day I'm doing some maths here. So does are the dahlias flowering at Christmas?
Not quite. So okay. For us, they start flowering at the end of January. But in the northern, like the north of Australia, in Queensland, they would be flowering. Yeah. Someone just messaged me today and said their first dahlia flowered.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I was going to say it must be like Christmas when you spot one that's really good, but it's not far off.
No, close. Yeah. So usually like the last week of January is when we first see flowers.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's so exciting. I'd love them all year round, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I feel like I need to do half my life here and half my life in Australia and just jump season to season. That'd be nice.
Enjoy the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm.
None of the winter.
Mm-mm. Oh, although you might get an out-of-season frost.
Yeah, maybe.
You move to northern mm-hmm. Australia.
As north as possible, yeah, just to be warm.
Oh, so
I think we've out dahlias.
To the end of the episode.
Yeah, we've really. Yeah, it's a lot of dahlias. God, I'm so sad. It's the end of the season.
Yeah, and it's just the start for you. So I think anyone looking for their dahlia fix definitely needs to hit up your account, which we will give the details in a minute.
Whoa! I was about to say you've missed.
Sarah has got her $1 million question first. It's Sarah's question.
You are allowed to ask it, but. If you had one piece of advice for our listeners in the coming growing season in Australia, but I guess next season for us here, what would it be?
I'm going to share the piece of advice that Ethan always gives me mm-hmm. because I'm like not naturally a gardener. Like mm-hmm. I kind of like fell into this pretty much by accident. And he is always telling me, just check your plants. Like, because I'm kind of like, you know, I planted that. It was looking good. And he's like, but did you check on it today? Like, you know, it's been hot today. It's been windy today. It might be wilting, you know, just check your plants. So he's always telling me, just check your plants. So that would be my
favorite. I love it. Just check your plants.
Yeah, I'm definitely a plant it and abandon it kind of person. So I'm going to take that one on board.
Yeah. That can be your new mantra for this year.
Well,
check your plants.
I love planting and I love harvesting, but that in-between stuff, like the weeding, the maintenance, the watering,
actual gardening,
the fertilizing. Yeah, I know. I don't really love that stuff, but, you know, it's part of it. And Ethan just keeps reminding me, check your plants.
Oh, that's amazing advice.
Wise words from Ethan. Yeah. I love it. So let's tell the listeners where they can find you. So you're on Instagram.
Yes.
Florally Seasonal Flowers.
That's right. All kind of joined together as one word.
Excellent. And you've also got a website.
Yes, I do. It's florally.com.au. Now, I know florally is a tricky word. So florally is kind of a play on my name. So my name is Florally, and Ethan joked one time that I should call my business Florally, or that my parents should have called me Florally. So F-L-O-R-E-L-I-E.
I love it. I think it's the best flower pun around, and so perfect with your name as well. And for all of the Australian listeners, they should head over and sign up to your newsletter, because that's where they're going to find out about all your amazing tuber sales.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not a super regular email. I usually just send them out when I have something important to share, or when I've written a new blog post, or, you know, we've decided we're running a workshop on something, or have extra dahlia tubers for sale. But I'm not the kind of person who's going to be like sending you an email every week, or necessarily even every month.
If they want more regular updates, Instagram's where to go, right?
Instagram's the place to be. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Florally. We've really enjoyed chatting to you about all things dahlias, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have you back for chatting all things peonies very soon. So watch out for that message to drop into your inbox. It's outro time.
Thank you so much for listening and for your support. We are loving this season so far.
And we hope you are too. If you loved the episode as much as we love doing it, then we would be so grateful if you left us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also subscribe, and you can find us on Instagram for more of our adventures at Let's Grow Girls Podcast.
We're really grateful having you here, listening to all of our interviews with our amazing guests. And we hope that you carry on enjoying the rest of the season.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.